talking about trusting in God. In God we trust. And our lesson this morning, if I can get my clicker here to work, if I turn it on, it would help. Our lesson this morning is trusting in God in hopelessness. Okay? And I think that that's something that all of us from time to time in our lives can relate to, because there are certainly times when whatever circumstance or situation we might find ourselves in, it can feel pretty hopeless. We've talked about this some before. We're going to spend a little bit of time looking at a little bit different story this morning than what we've looked at before, but looking at learning how to trust God in circumstances or situations where we feel very hopeless. We've talked about, as we began with all this, we're laying a foundation, talking about that we as a nation use this as a motto, in God we trust, and we have it printed on our money. And how many of you still have your in God we trust that I passed out to you? Okay, again, I encourage you to think about it not just simply as a penny. It's not worth a whole lot as a penny, monetary value, but it's worth everything as an in God we trust. And hopefully you'll keep that and be reminded always of trusting in God. Because here's the question we've been talking about. We say trust God, but do we really trust Him? When it really comes down to it, do we trust Him? We look at the circumstances we find ourselves in, and especially those like we're talking about today that seem to be hopeless, and we tell one another and we say to one another, well, just trust in God. Everything will be okay. Just trust in God. But what does that really mean? And do we just kind of say it because maybe sometimes we don't know what else to say? See? And it's just become one of those like, hi, how are you things that we say, but we really don't mean it. Well, hopefully through this study, it will help us to learn not just to say it, but to truly mean it. To truly learn to trust in God in everything. We face a lot of different circumstances. And again, one we're going to look at this morning has to do with hopelessness. Those situations that challenge us, sometimes on a daily basis, right? Okay? What does God do in the midst of those challenges that we're facing? And not only that, but what does He call upon us to do? How does He call upon us to respond to what's going on in our life at any given time when it comes to trusting in Him? And we've also talked about the fact that trust is a choice. Learning to trust in God is something we have to choose to do. And then one of the principles that we talk about from the very beginning is this, that our trusting is shown by obeying Him in the things that we know that He's told us to do. Okay? Because if we don't trust Him in the things that we know that He's told us to do, then how are we ever going to trust Him in those things that are uncertain in our lives? Okay? So, let's talk about trusting in God in hopelessness. And we've talked many times in the past about our Red Sea events. Okay, this whole idea of the Israelites being there at the Red Sea is kind of like this concept, being lost in hopelessness. Now, they've just come from bondage in Egypt. They've been slaves for over 400 years. And now they are free from Egyptian bondage, but they find themselves in perhaps one of the most hopeless situations that anybody could find, okay? They have left Egypt, and they travel to the shores of the Red Sea, and they look back and they see Pharaoh's army coming after them. Because what happened was that once the Israelites left, and Pharaoh and his officials then started thinking about what they've done. They said, we just let go our workforce. Who's going to do all the workforce? And so they decided to go after him and get him back. And so here's the Israelite people there on the shore of the Red Sea. No way that they can see to get past the Red Sea, and the Egyptian army coming up behind them. Okay? and they begin to panic. They say to Moses, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die?" Okay? That's how desperate and how hopeless they felt. "This is not going to turn out well for us. We are going to die. There's no real good solution to this. It is hopeless." All right? Then they say to Moses, "Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone. Let us serve the Egyptians'? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." Now, I don't know about you, but to me, that sounds like total hopelessness. Okay? This situation, as I said, is not good. It's not going to turn out good. There is no way that I see this is going to work very well for us. How many times have you ever found yourself in a situation like that? You see? I don't see any real solution to this. It's not going to turn out good. Moses says to the people, and we talked about this back a few months ago. We were looking at this very slide where Moses tells them three things that God says to them. First of all, he says, "Do not be afraid." Secondly, he says, "Stand firm." Okay? "And you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today." And he goes on to tell them, he said, these Egyptians that you see today, you will never see them again. Okay? "The Lord will fight for you. You need only be still." And we talked about then how important those three statements really are when we find ourselves in these situations where we feel totally hopeless, that we need, first of all, to not be afraid. And that's one of the first things that we feel, isn't it? Is fear comes over us. And we have to recognize that that's Satan. Because God is saying, "Don't be afraid." And secondly, we need to stand firm. In other words, don't run. Don't try to run and hide from this situation. That's not going to solve anything. And then the third thing is be still. You know, so often what we do is we try to come up with our own solutions to stuff. You know, even when, again, we know what God is telling us to do, but instead of obeying Him and trusting in Him in those things, we try to figure out our own solutions to the problems. So we need to be still. Here's an interesting thing, and I don't know if you've ever realized this about that story and about that whole situation. Okay? If you go back one chapter to chapter 13 in Exodus, here's what it says to us. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country. Okay? Now, look at the map on here, and you see the Philistine country is way up there at the top, and where they were in the land of Goshen, it would have been a direct route straight across. Look at what he says here. Though that was shorter. Okay? That was the shortest route for them to go from Goshen to the Promised Land, but he says God did not lead them that way. Why? For God said if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So in other words, if they had gone that way, they would most likely very soon would have faced an enemy that they'd have been in battle and they'd have turned and run. I mean, here they were on the Red Sea and what they want to do? They want to go back, right? So in other words, they weren't ready for that yet. And so instead of taking them the short way, look at what it says. God led the people, okay? God led the people around by the desert road toward the Red Sea. Now, what is that really saying to us? It's saying that in that very hopeless situation that they found themselves in, caught between the Red Sea and the Egyptian army, God put them there. Okay? Did you get that? God put them in that hopeless situation for His purposes. And then God provided His solution to that problem, didn't He? You see, God always has a purpose for the trials and the testing that we go through. He puts us through those things, and He has a purpose for it. Perhaps it's to teach us something. Perhaps it's to help us to grow. Perhaps it's to get us ready for something else that He's going to be bringing us to. But God always has a purpose for taking us where He does. And in this case, God wanted to build their faith in His purpose for them. Okay? They needed a really, really big faith builder. And how much bigger could that get than parting the Red Sea and crossing over on dry ground? Okay? And all of us in our lives from time to time have had Red Sea events. And by the way, just in case you don't realize this, you will have more. Okay? I don't want to bust your bubble or anything, but to let you realize that indeed you will have more in your lifetime. Because life is that way. Okay? And for a lot of those Red Sea events that we face in our lives, there really are no solutions to be found. At least not on our behalf. Not from our perspective. Okay? No solutions found. But yet God has a purpose behind every one of them. And if we would just learn to trust Him in that, and to realize that whatever it is we're going through at any given time, God is working out His purpose. And we need to trust Him and allow Him to work that purpose through us at that time. Because ultimately, this is true. God's purpose is greater than any problem you and I will ever face in our life. Really, really is. May not seem that way when we're in the midst of the problem, but again, it requires us to trust Him that His purpose is far greater than this problem, and His solution is always far greater than that. Okay? Sometimes in those things, God will take you the long way around. That's something we've got to remember, just like with the Israelites. He knows you're not ready for the shortcut, although what is it that we usually want? We want the shortcut. God, get this over with. Fix this. Get me out of this. How many times have you ever prayed that? Okay, yeah. And from God's perspective, He may be saying, no, you're not ready for the short way. There are some things you need to learn. And so He's going to take you the long way around. Just like He did with the Israelites. So let's turn our attention in this study this morning to another story. The story of Hannah. It actually comes from the story of Samuel, okay, 1 Samuel. But in the first chapter, we don't hear a whole lot about Samuel. It's really all about Hannah. Okay? And so in this first part, we're talking about, and we want to look at Hannah being deeply distressed. Okay? The story of Hannah is a really powerful story. And one of the reasons that this story is it fits into what we're talking about in learning to trust in God and to really appreciate it is you have to understand the culture of that time. And the culture really dictated that for a woman of that particular time period, giving a child to her husband, and specifically a male child, to have a son, they considered that to be their primary number one purpose in life. Okay, that's how important it was. Now, I know that, you know, for a lot of women today, that whole concept of having kids and everything is like, you know, well, do I really want to do that? And, you know, but understand, today it's more of a kind of, yeah, we'd like to have some kids one day and, you know, and so forth. But to them, it was a matter of carrying on the family line And a wife who could not do that for her husband felt shame and disgrace. That's how important and significant this whole situation is. And that's why Hannah felt so hopeless. Because she could not fulfill her primary role in life. And so understand that as we look at what's going on in the story of Hannah. And as Holloway read for us as we began this morning, 1 Samuel begins by laying out for us basically what's going on here. And he talks about this man named Elkanah. Okay, he tells, you know, where he's from and who his fathers are. You see, that's all lineage. And that's not there in the story by accident. You see, because lineage was everything to them. That's why if you go and you read the Gospel of Matthew and the Gospel of Luke in the first chapters, what do you find there? Lineage. You see, that shows who they were and who their parents were and so-and-so begat so-and-so and so-and-so. Read the book of Numbers. Because lineage was everything to them. And so 1 Samuel chapter 1 starts out with a lineage of Elkanah. It tells us who he was, who his father was, his grandfather and great-grandfather, who he came from. And then notice that it says here, he is the son of Tohu, the son of Zuph, an Ephraimite. And then, it tells us this. He had two wives. One was called Hannah, and the other Peninnah. Peninnah had children, and Hannah had none. Year after year, this man went up from his town to worship and sacrifice to the Lord Almighty at Shiloh, where Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons of Eli, were priests of the Lord. You continue to read through Samuel, you'll hear some about these two guys who were really rascals. Okay, but they're priests of the Lord serving there at Shiloh. And look at this next part. Whenever the day came for Elkanah to sacrifice, he would give portions of the meat to his wife Peninnah and to all her sons and daughters. So Peninnah had several children. But Hannah had how many? None. And then look at this next statement. But to Hannah he gave a double portion, okay, because he loved her. What does that mean? Well, what it really indicates here is that the reason that Elkanah had two wives is because Hannah could not have children. The one that he loved could not bear him children, so he had a second wife who could bear him children. But he loved Hannah. You see, even though she couldn't bear him children, he loved her. Now, Peninnah most likely understood that dynamic going on in her relationship with Elkanah, and that's why she would provoke Hannah over and over and over again. Okay, look at what it says. Because the Lord had closed her womb, her rival, that is Peninnah, kept provoking her in order to irritate her. And this went on year after year. Okay. Think about some of the situations that you have felt in your life where you felt hopeless, and the longer it goes on, the worse it feels, doesn't it? And here we're told this went on year after year. So this was not a short-term problem and situation that Hannah felt. This was going on year after year. Okay? Whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival provoked her till she wept and would not eat. And Elkanah, her husband, would say to her, "Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons? Can you just kind of feel the love that Elkanah has for his wife Hannah, that he's saying to her, look, I know sons are important, but I love you even more than 10 sons. And don't I mean more to you than having 10 sons? That's how much he loved her. But it didn't help. It didn't help. It did not help her feelings of worthlessness and hopelessness in not being able to provide children for her husband. Okay? Year after year after year after year, this goes on. We find a similar incident, by the way, with Sarah and Abraham. Okay? You remember the promise that God made to Abraham that through you all nations of the earth would be blessed, that is, through your seed. The problem was Abraham didn't have any children. So how was God going to carry out this promise? And somewhere along the line, Sarah decided that God needed her help, right? And so she goes to Abraham and says, take my maidservant, Hagar, and sleep with her and bear a son by him. And so Abraham goes, okay. And so Hagar bears Abraham a son by the name of Ishmael. Well, then God visits with Abraham and Sarah and tells them, a year from now, you're going to bear a son. And that son comes, and his name is Isaac. But here's what it says in chapter 21, verses 9 and 10. Sarah saw that the son whom Hagar the Egyptian had borne to Abraham was mocking. She said to Abraham, get rid of that slave woman and her son, for that woman's son will never share in the inheritance with my son Isaac. So my point here is we see this idea of this rivalry between several wives, okay, or of a man at that time, that, you know, there's this concern about what? Lineage. There it is again. It's lineage. Of course, we understand, we should understand, that that was never how God intended for things to be. From the very beginning, God intended for it to be one man, one woman for life. And let me say that again in case anybody got that confused. One man and one woman for life. Okay? That's God's design and intention. Right? But we see Hannah in this place, if you will, of being deeply distressed. Look at the different statements that the text makes concerning how Hannah is feeling. All right? In verse 7, it says, she would weep and not eat. Okay? Think about some of the times when you have been deeply distressed and over whatever hopeless situation you're facing, and maybe you found yourself not being able to sleep and maybe weeping and not being able to eat and so forth. That's where Hannah was. In verse 10, it says she was deeply distressed and wept bitterly, it says. And then again, verse 10, as she's praying, she says, look at the affliction of your servant. Affliction. She considers the situation that she is in as being an affliction. You see, this is more than just simply being childless. This is an affliction upon her as she's feeling it. In verse 15, she says to Eli, I am a woman troubled in spirit. I've been pouring out my soul. And then in verse 16, I have been speaking out of my great anxiety and vexation. Do you just get a sense of where Hannah was in her hopelessness? That this is a situation that she sees no remedy for. Again, keep in mind, this has been going on year after year after year. And still, no child. but she does have hope. Okay? Take a look at Hannah and her hope. Verse 9 is a really interesting statement, because this is basically what it says. After the feast, Hannah got up. Some of your texts will say Hannah rose. Okay? She basically, apparently, was so bitter and struggling so much with her situation that she didn't feel much like, and she couldn't really enjoy the feast that her family was celebrating. And so she got up. She went to the temple. Hannah got up. So, in other words, she didn't just continue wallowing in self-pity or any of those kinds of things. She took her situation, her hopeless situation, to the one place that she believed would be able to make a difference, and that was to the temple, to the Lord. And so Hannah got up. In the temple, it was there that she indeed found, on this occasion, hope from the Lord. And it was there that Hannah vowed a vow. She made a vow to the Lord. Here's what her vow says. O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction, there it is again, the affliction of your servant. That's how she saw her situation. So if you will look on the affliction of your servant and remember me and not forget your servant. You see what she's doing, calling upon God, the God of the universe, to remember her. Little old Hannah. Little old childless Hannah. Who, as far as most people in her day and her time were concerned, was pretty worthless. But she goes to the God of the universe. Do you see this? And she says, please remember me. Remember me. Your servant. But if you will give to your servant a son. You see, that's really what this is all about, isn't it? That one thing that she longed for more than anything else in her entire life, to have a son. If you would give me a son. And again, I'm hoping that you will understand the gravity of this situation that she feels herself in and the desperate plea that she is offering for that one thing. That one thing that is the most important thing in her life that she asked God for specifically. You would give me a son. Now, here's the next thing that is so awesome about this vow, okay? That one thing that she wants more than anything, what does she promise to do? To give him right back to the Lord. You see that? If you will give your servant a son, I'll give him right back to you. All the days of his life, and no razor shall touch his head. Lord, if you will answer your servant's prayer in this hopeless situation and grant me this one thing, I will give it right back to you. Do you understand what's taking place here? I mean, really? Have you ever had that one thing in your life that you wanted and felt that you needed so desperately that you couldn't really live without it? And then, if you were to receive that one thing, whatever it would be, that you would turn around and dedicate it right back to God. Give it right back to Him. Do you understand how awesome that really is? Because you see, usually when there's something in our life that we really desperately want, and we feel like we can't live without it, what do we typically want it for? Ourselves. Right? We want it for us. And God, if you would just give this to me, then I sure would be happy. But how many times are we willing to go to God and with whatever that hopeless situation is, and to say to God, God, if you will just take care of this for me, I'll give it right back to you. That's what Hannah did. What she longed for and asked the Lord for, that son, she turned right around and gave it right back to me. And by the way, this was not just an empty vow, by the way. And that's another whole lesson some other time, okay? But we need to make sure that when you make a vow to the Lord, you keep it. And of course, as you read through the remainder of the book of Samuel, you'll see that she kept her vow. Okay? But she dedicated that very thing that she so desperately asked the Lord for right back to Him for His service and His purpose. Whatever you perhaps have been feeling hopeless about, have you asked God for a remedy, first of all? But secondly, and I think more importantly, have you, and are you willing to give whatever that is back to God for His purpose? You know, I don't know. It could be maybe a job or a different job, a new job, but and you desperately need it because of the finances, for example, and so forth. But you dedicate that, Lord, if you will just give me this new job, then I'll dedicate it back to you. And that you will, in everything you're doing in that job, for instance, that it will be dedicated to the Lord in service to Him. See, that's just one example of how we can and need to do that. Okay. Whatever that hopeless situation is, we would ask for God's remedy only to give that remedy right back to Him for His purpose in our life. Because really, what we need to understand is that's what our life is really all about, is God's purpose. Okay? It's not about your purpose for you in life, it's about His. And learning to trust in God has a lot to do with learning to serve out His purpose for you instead of your own. And we need to understand that, again, sometimes it will take us the long way around. The challenge for us is to look at those hopeless situations that we may be facing at any time in our life and to see how are we going to face that. And my challenge is to for you to give it to God, but give it to Him for His purpose. You see, ask Him for what it is that you need. We need to be doing that. He wants us to do that, by the way. But be willing to turn it right around and give it back to Him, dedicating it for His purpose, whatever that might be in your life. And that's how we learn to trust in God in those hopeless situations that we find ourselves in, just like Anna. What a great, great example. Going from that hopelessness to filled with a life of not just hope, but of joy and receiving what God had given to her in answer to her prayer, but dedicating it right back to Him. What are you feeling hopeless about in your life? What are you doing about it? Let me challenge you to think about a couple of things. First of all, maybe what is God doing right now in your hopelessness? Well, perhaps what He's doing is taking you the long way around because He might want you to be learning something. Or He knows that you're not ready for that yet and He's preparing you for it. But then secondly, how does God want you to respond in that hopelessness? And I'd suggest to you that it would be like Hannah. Go to Him in prayer over whatever that circumstance is. But go to Him, not just asking Him to fix it, but dedicating whatever it is that you so desperately need and want back to Him for His purpose. If you need some guidance, some help, some prayers, encouragement, whatever it is, what's going on in your life, this is a great place and a great time to be able to find that. If there's someone here this morning who's not yet given your life to the Lord, you need to know that you have the opportunity to do that right now. If you're ready to make a commitment to give your life to Christ, if you believe that Jesus is the Son of God and you're ready to make Him Lord of your life, then call upon Him as your Lord. And repent of the sins that are separating you from Him and have those sins washed away in the waters of baptism. And you can do that right now. You don't have to wait for anything. Dale will be in the back to receive anyone that would like to have a private prayer or conversation with him. And I'll be right up front here to receive anyone who would like to come up. Tom has a song. Let's stand together and sing. Tom?